My name is Kyle Lukoff, and I'm here talking about Too Bright to See.
Welcome to The Yarn, a School Library Journal production. I'm Travis Yonker. It was a pleasure to talk with author and former school librarian Kyle Lukoff at the American Library Association Annual Conference in Washington, D.C. In this episode, Kyle takes us behind the scenes of his Newbery and Stonewall award-winning novel, Too Bright to See. Kyle shares how the book came to him all at once, how it sat on the shelf until the right time, and what it's like to get the call from the Newbery Committee when you've sat on book award committees yourself. Let's get started. It's time to unravel Too Bright to See.
It's a book that's a little bit hard to describe without spoiling the ending. So the way that I talk about it, especially at book festivals, when a kid comes up to my table, is I point to the cover and I say, this is Bug. This is Bug's house. And Bug's house is haunted, but it's always been haunted. That's not really a big deal. But when Bug's uncle dies, a new ghost shows up, and Bug has to figure out what this ghost is trying to communicate and why it's come back. I was a school librarian for a long time, and the first idea for this came when I was at my library. It was the morning, like the kids were being dropped off from school. I was talking to a mom at my school who's also a children's book writer, and I was telling her that I sort of wanted to write a middle grade novel about a trans boy because I didn't really know of any that I liked at that point. And also, I wanted to write a story where I took the first sentence of a short story that my dad wrote when he was younger, which was, it's strange living in the old house now that Uncle Roderick is dead. And I said, I don't know what I want to do first. And then, of course, I had that brainstorm of, oh, I'm going to write a middle grade novel about a trans boy using that first sentence of my dad's. And the whole book just showed up in my head. Like, all the major beats just popped into my head at that moment, and it took me years to finish it. I started it, I was working with a different agent at the time who didn't like this project very much, so eventually I gave up on it, and I only returned to it after I sold the Call Me Max series, because I realized that maybe I had more books in me than just a couple. And so I went back, I read the first few chapters that I had finished, and I thought, this isn't terrible. Like, if this was a book on my library shelf, I would give this to one of my students. Maybe if I finish it, it might someday get published. Maybe someone will want to read this. I'm so glad I didn't give up. My practice is just starting from the beginning and going to the end. So I wrote the beginning, which was, it's strange living in the old house now that Uncle Roderick is dead. And then I had to explain why it was strange. And then the next chapter was explaining why Uncle Roderick was dead. And then the next chapter was what happened after that. Very orderly. I started to listen to the audiobook after it came out. And the audiobook is read by Jax Jackson, who is a good and old friend of mine. And people kept telling me that I wrote a sad book, and I would always say, oh, okay, that sounds real. And then it was only when I was listening to Jax's narration that I thought to myself, this book is so sad. I never quite realized what I was doing, although I will say that I was working on copy edits for Too Bright to See at the same time as I was drafting Different Kinds of Fruit. And those are two radically different voices, and it was very hard for me to switch narrative voices when I was working on the different drafts. And I think that also helped me realize that I was capturing a certain mood and a certain tone in Too Bright to See, but I don't know how I did it. It was just, this is the only way to tell this story. I learned that it is harder to write a full-length novel than I thought it would be. And this might seem obvious, I did not realize it at the time, it is much easier to read a book than it is to write a book. I describe picture books as like putting together a watch where every little gear and piece has to intersect perfectly, whereas writing a novel feels much more like you're juggling all these disparate elements, like a chicken and a bowling ball and a rubber chicken and also all of your hopes and dreams and also some fire, and you're juggling all these things at the same time and you can't drop any one thing. It's a very different experience from writing a picture book, which I knew intellectually, but it wasn't until I experienced it that I felt the like physical sensation of holding everything and not being able to drop any of it. I know a lot of writer friends who can, if they have the time, they are capable of sitting and writing for 4 or 6 or 8 or 10 hours. I can't do it. Like, I can write one solid scene, and when that's over, I am done and I cannot work on another thing until the next day. I wish I could. The most challenging part, honestly, was believing that I could finish it. Like I said, I gave up for several years in the middle, and the most challenging part was putting down something that I thought wasn't working and knowing that it was still there, sort of taunting me into my Google Drive and wondering if I was ever going to do anything with it, or if those like hours of work and those first like 6 or 8 chapters were just going to languish for the rest of my life and never turn into a real book. Once I put my mind to finishing it, I just finished it, and then I sent it to the person who's now my agent, and I thought to myself, well, if she doesn't like it, at least she can give me some good feedback on what's not working, because she's someone that I've been in touch with in the past about other projects that she didn't sign for, and I thought to myself, well, if she doesn't like it, she'll at least tell me what I can do to fix it. And I was very shocked when she told me that she loved it and wanted to sign it immediately. And then I was very shocked when she started submitting it to editors and it went to auction, because this was something that I'd given up on and that I really wasn't sure that anyone would ever want to read. And then suddenly I'm getting these contracts with like writers in them, like, if you win a Newbery. And I was like, wait, what? No, but that's for other people. That's not for this book. So you have to understand that I was an elementary school librarian for almost a decade. I was a bookseller for a decade before that. I was on the Stonewall Committee for 2 years. Some of my best friends have been on Newbery. Like, one of my best friends was on the Newbery in 2019, like very recently. So I have an understanding of that process from the inside that I think a lot of my like writer colleagues don't necessarily share, which means that like, from the beginning, I knew that the Newbery existed. I knew when the ALA Midwinter Conference was. I knew that you got the call Monday morning. I just had an insight into that process from the other side of the experience. I saw all the lists. I read all the reviews. Like, I knew, like, I know, like, I made Betsy Bird's mock Newbery prediction, but Heavy Metal chose a different book. Like, I was tracking all these things, like it was like hair spexy, like, you know, that's when you like, that's like prophecy through rabbit entrails or animal entrails, that's what that's called. Anyway, I wish that I was less involved and invested in the process, but I don't think that you can be like an elementary school librarian who's been on awards committees and just not have this information. Like, I'm jealous of writers who maybe go to ALA once or twice and know some librarians but aren't as like enmeshed in the process. I've described the experience of being like a writer and a reviewer and a librarian and all these things as being both, like, you know, they say that you don't want to know how the sausage is made. I am the farmer and I am the grocery store clerk and I am the butcher and I am the chef and I am also the pig. I cannot say that I recommend it. It was challenging. And then I had already prepared to be a disaster the weekend of the Midwinter Conference, because I knew that that's when, I assumed that's when they were going to be deciding. I'd already told my boyfriend, I'd already told my friends, I'm going to be a mess. I apologize in advance for what a disaster that I'll be. And then I found out on Saturday afternoon that they had already, that other committees had made their decisions earlier in the week, and that they might not be sticking to the early Monday morning phone call, which just made everything worse. Because at least I thought, well, Monday morning is when I'll know. And then I suddenly found out that that wasn't necessarily true, but it also might be true, and there's no way to know. So First, I found out about the Stonewall, and I found about that because my editor had put a fake meeting into my calendar, and I was like, well, it's weird, but sure, I guess we're having a meeting. I don't know. And so I found out about Stonewall Sunday afternoon, and by that point, I knew that Stonewall had gotten their calls. I knew that Caldecott had gotten their calls because a friend of mine had told me that. I knew that Coretta Scott King had gotten their calls, so I thought to myself, well, it seems like people have already gotten their calls. It seems like they've made their decision already. And at this point, it was Sunday evening. And I was like, well, it looks like I'm not going to get another call. And that's okay. I'm really proud to win a second Stonewall. I will write more books. And I was really coming to a place of, like, acceptance. And then I was leaving. Like, my boyfriend and I were leaving my Brooklyn apartment to drive down to Philly when my phone started buzzing with a Chicago number. And I know that ALA is based in Chicago. And I also know that Tad Andracki lives in Chicago because, like, I had, like, met him once, I think. So, like, I just knew, you know, I just know librarians. And when my phone started ringing, I was like, I know what this means. And it was just such a roller coaster. When I write a book, I'm done writing it, and I don't even hope that people like it. I mean, I do hope that, but I also kind of don't think about it. It's done. It's out of my hands now. People often ask me what I want readers to take from a book or what I hope that they experience from one of my books, but I've worked with enough kids and other people over the last 20 years to know that whatever someone takes from my book says more about what they brought to it than about what I put into it. And that also human beings are their own complicated mass of, like, emotions and experiences and, like, you know, the weird parts of your brain that latch onto something and you don't really know why until 20 years later. And so I have let go of hoping that anyone will get anything particular or specific out of my book, and just hoping that there are people who experience this book in the same way that I experienced books when I was younger, in ways that didn't even fully make sense to me at the time. They just sort of rooted their way into my consciousness and subconsciousness and just stayed there.
Before we ended the interview, I had to ask Kyle about his latest novel, Different Kinds of Fruit.
So Different Kinds of Fruit is actually my personal favorite of my books so far. It is the funniest book that I've written so far, and it is the book that most thoroughly describes and explores the communities that I call home.
Thank you, Kyle Lukoff, for the interview. Thank you to my co-host, Colby Sharp. Thank you, Philip Stead, for creating our theme music. Additional music for this episode from the Free Music Archive. Have an idea for the show? You can contact us via email at theyarnpodcast@gmail.com and visit us online at the School Library Journal website. I'm Travis Yonker. Thanks for listening.